Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Ooh, it's a hot one. I feel like Rob Thomas or something right now. It's
7 inches from the midday sun, are you?
Let's just start it off with cheese. Yeah, it's hot. It's hot. So we're going to try to get this going. It's summer.
It is. It's mid-July here in San Francisco, California. We're just past the midway point of the season, heading into the All-Star break in a week and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
All right. Well, hey, welcome to the show, everyone.
A week, actually.
This is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson.
And we are back, as promised, a lot sooner than we were last time we came back to you. So we are happy about that. We are mostly happy about the baseball season and its developments, and always enjoy the game anyway.
Now, as a card-carrying Dodger fan, do you want to check my wallet? I'm happy. Now, are you happy, Mr. Paul, as a Giants fan?
Well, you know, I think I'm probably happier than most, but there's been... You know, the problem with the Giants right now, if they hadn't have won 107 games last year, most people at this point would be absolutely ecstatic with being a couple games over 500 halfway. And this is where we expected to be, but the expectations were raised because... they did so well last year. And so if you compare this year to last year, no, I'm not happy. But overall, it's not as dire as most Giants fan would like to tell you. It may not be a playoff year, but it's not totally out of the realm of the possibility at this point. And you know, baseball is a game of averages. We know this. We talk about averages quite a lot.
Well, again, I think that's what's happening
and so of course there was going to be a regression to the mean, and last year they did the things with for the most part this exact roster, and everything worked almost every time, and that is what was unusual. What we're seeing now is that things that they're doing aren't
going quite
as well. Yeah. I don't know if it's not sustainable, but the expectations that you know. This a couple days ago, the Giants hit their first pinch hit home run of the season. And the league leader at this point only has four pinch hit home runs as a team. But this time last year, the Giants had 8 pinch hit home runs. So last year was such a miracle season and something totally just like, you know, off its, you know, way above average in terms of execution and probabilities that eschews what's actually going on this season. And yes, the short answer is yes, I'm mostly happy. And they still, you know, can beat the Dodgers. They still can beat the Padres. And those are the most important teams to beat, regardless of the rest of the how the rest of the season is shaping up.
Yeah, I think it seems more like last season was. I don't know if you used the word miraculous, but that's what it definitely seemed like.
Because it did. I mean, it was because it was such the averages that were happening were just like way above the norm.
It was shocking.
It was shocking. Mean, everything that they did seemed to work out in a positive way for the Giants. And so when it happens, seemingly by chance, that it doesn't always work out. it's a letdown, but it was a bit of a miracle, but hey, miracles can happen in baseball.
apparently, unless you face Max Scherzer in the NLDS. But
and get a couple
I think
bad
this
calls,
it's
but,
yeah. it's this is a lot more what everybody expected last year, and it's
yeah,
just,
absolutely.
It's just yeah, like you said, regression to the mean. It makes sense. It's baseball. Everything catches up. You had a good run. But shoot for 2030.
I think there's a couple of guys were pressing. It's tough to sustain that kind of success over the long haul. They started the season out of the box great. They're keeping up, keeping pace. But I think a lot of injuries. They weren't able to do as much because of those injuries, and I think guys just started. Pressing a little bit, and I think if they relax and start to have fun again and get healthy and stay healthy, I think that the season can definitely be salvaged, and I don't think they're totally out of the running for a spot in the postseason tournament.
He is a sick puppy.
Now, the Giants closer
has issues.
Roles or woes, depending on how you want to look at it, has to have something to do with their average performance.
Absolutely.
They're around 500 at the halfway mark.
The bullpen is one of the biggest question marks that this team has had for the last couple of years.
Since June 20th, Camilo Doval has allowed batters a 308, 406, 536 triple slash line, given up 5 earned runs in 6 1/3 innings. His cutter seems to have disappeared. His cutter sits at like 99, but it seems to have disappeared, and his walk rate has jumped up to 10.5% as he's become more reliant on his slider. In July alone, batters are tuning him up so far to a 333 batting average on both of those pitches. It just seems... I mean, in May, they hit 500 on the cutter. So, I mean, I can see why he's not throwing the cutter. But, like, what's going on here? If he's not the guy, what's he still doing in there?
Well, I know that when he came up last year, one of the things that had been holding him back was his control issues. That he has always had great stuff, as you just highlighted there. But... that was one of the things with him is just general control. He's been hit really hard in the last several weeks, but he's not the only Giants pitcher get hit hard. And I think that one of the biggest, most glaring differences between this year's team and last year's team is the guy who squatted behind the plate wearing number 28. Buster Posey is a big
hard to argue
hole in the Giants roster, and he brought so much confidence to the pitchers to have Buster Posey back there catching and calling the pitches.
Well, is he going to be our ignoble award? I didn't think that was going to happen.
Shame.
But are you shaming him for simply hanging him up a little too too I'm early not, I'm, and I'm, blaming I'm not, him for all of your woes?
Absolutely oh, not. I am merely pointing out that the absence of Buster Posey is a deficit for this team, and it has been from the moment that he came up to the big leagues.
It's true. It's not just his bat; it's his presence behind the mound.
Yeah, and in the clubhouse,
and maybe calming down some of these kids, because Dominic Leone has not been much help either. Since June 18th, he's allowed 6 earned runs over his last 5 2/3 innings, with 7 strikeouts and 8 walks. It's just not going to get it done. It's not going to cut the mustard.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. I mean, Doval can't pitch against lefties. I mean, that's just. The entire season, they're hitting over 300 with it's almost 1,000 slugging against him. I mean, sorry, 500 slugging, almost 1,000 OPS, over 400 OBP. They just DFA'd Jake McGee. This happened right. A couple of days ago. Are they going to be buyers at this trade deadline, or are they just going to say,
to hell with it? It's hard to say.
Because they need bullpen help.
They definitely need bullpen help. But it's hard to say what they're going to do with the deadline. I think probably they will be buyers, but they don't really have too many great pieces to really move without, you know, adding more holes to the roster that Farhan is trying to rebuild on the fly.
Well, it seems like the team, like the Giants have had this issue for the last, several years now, where they're just too old when you look at the average age of everybody.
Yeah, they are definitely an older team. So is this time
maybe you offload Rodon, maybe you offload Jocko, maybe you...
I mean, those are certainly the two names that are being mentioned with regards to who do the Giants really have to trade, and those are the two names that come up because those are the two best performers. One of the things that happened around the downturn of the team was that Joey Bart was sent back down to the minors.
It wasn't that he was sent back down, it was that his performance was abysmal.
As a batter, yeah. Yes, his performance was definitely abysmal. His defense wasn't.
Which is strange because I was always under the impression that it was the other way around, that they liked his bat, they just didn't like his defense, and then this year,
right? Well, that
the switch on everybody and did the exact opposite,
right? And that was one of the things. It's like, yeah, he's not as good a defender as Buster Posey. But his bat is just as good, if not a little bit better. And it goes back to what I said about guys pressing. This guy was under a tremendous amount of pressure to fill the shoes of Buster Posey.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be a better bat. He's trying too hard. Goes back down to the minor, gets a little bit of rest, works on his swing a little bit. He starts to hit again, and the minors, they bring him up. He nearly hits another home run in Arizona, and now one near complete game, Giants yesterday blew out the Padres 10-1.
That was shocking. That was pretty shocking.
Have they turned a corner? Well, we'll see what happens in leading up to the All-Star game. But, having Bart back behind the plate again may help calm some of these pitchers down and get them back under control a little bit.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Now, the Dodgers are not without their closing role woes, as well as... is evidenced by one Craig Kimbrell, who has given me more heart palpitations and taken more years off of my life.
Yeah, a few gray hairs
than I've enjoyed
there,
since Brian Wilson was put on the team. Even before he got hit in the back with a comebacker, a few days ago, or last week. He just hasn't seemed himself. And although maybe this is the new Kimbrel, you know, he's already been charged with 4 losses thus far and has a replacement level 4.66 ERA with a 1.5 whip. Dave Roberts still keeps going to him. Okay, I get it. He's the guy that you brought in to do the job. He's the most saves of any active closer right now, although I think Kenley Jansen's closing in on him a little bit. He's just kind of like Doval. He's just struggling against left-handed batters this season, posting, and I had to double-check this because I couldn't believe these numbers. Kimbrel against left-handed batters this season, 361, 418, 508 slash line against him. He's also, you know, all but abandoned his curveball, which, you know, used to act as a timing, like a changeup, essentially, to hitters. In May, he was throwing the curveball 37% of the time. June, 32%. And then so far in July, only 27%. You know, with Daniel Hudson out for the rest of the season, I can understand, in a sense, why Dave Roberts wants to turn to the veteran. It's just hard to watch, man. Like, I don't know. He's just throwing up taters. Like, I appreciate that he's attacking the zone, but it's like, hey, man, you know, switch it up a little bit. I think maybe Doval's having the same issue. He's just leaving him hanging, or he's not using his best pitch or his what used to
or,
be.
Or doesn't have confidence in it for whatever reason.
Which, you know, we saw, obviously, last 2021 NLDS, we saw him struggling against the Dodgers. He was also a little stretched out. Doval, that is. He was stretched out a little bit too long. He was young. He was green. Maybe Buster Posey. You know, who knows? This year, though, it seems like it's already been a few months. He's already been to the postseason. He should be a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
Doval. But on the opposite end of that spectrum is Kimbrel, who's been to the show many, many, many times.
Right.
He's been doing it longer than anybody, essentially actively right now, and is having the same problems. I will say the, you know, flame-throwing Bruisdar Gratterall, who got 2 basically full innings last night with the save, crushed it, is, I guess, the de facto next man up. I mean, he had a injury scare a few days ago, but he looked great last night. You know, though early June was a bit rocky for him, but since June 8th, he's appeared in 13 games. That is Gratterall tossing 13 2/3 innings. With 13 strikeouts and 0 walks, he allowed just 2 earned runs on a home run, and 12 of his appearances have been free of hits. He's probably not available in your league, but he's still available in, like, you know, 30-something percent of leagues right now, because he's, I mean, if you're in a holds league, obviously snatch him up. But saves only, Kimbrel's days might be numbered. I can't imagine if he blows many more saves.
That Roberts they'd want to trust they, him. They yeah. want to keep him. Would they be some? Could he be moved at the trade deadline? Kimbrel?
That's I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. Just because, you know, I don't think he was supposed to be a temporary addition. And the Dodgers kind of need all hands on deck. They kind of need all the help they can get. Again, with Hudson gone, you know, it's like they have options, but. No, I think he's staying. I'm just a little worried. But, you know, Bruisdar, I've been watching Gratterall lately. You know, he used to have that 100-mile-an-hour, 102-mile-an-hour fastball that was kind of just flat. It was kind of just didn't really move. But lately, if you've been watching these games, man, that fastball's jumping. It's moving. It's got some ride. So and he figured something out.
Been talking to Trevor Bauer behind
the scenes. Well, you know, maybe. up at Driveline or whatever, like where Kenley Jansen sort of made his renaissance. He figured out a lot of things, you know, maybe. Yeah. I mean, the guy has pure, raw talent, easy 100 miles an hour, but he didn't have a high strikeout rate, which is strange, and his ERA had always been pretty average. But lately, it seems like the last maybe month or two, he's been looking really good, and that's exactly what the Dodgers need moving forward.
Well, it's interesting with all of these conversations that we've had about the ball this year, last year, it's not only just pitchers. that are complaining about the slickness of the ball and the feel of the ball while throwing. And I wonder if just the ball is affecting some of these guys who are known to have high velocities, that they just don't have the grip anymore to really have the pitch do what it's supposed to do.
The pitch
that,
is still
that
the
99, that 99 mile an hour cutter of Duvall's maybe just doesn't have quite the feel on it. He can still throw it 99 miles an hour, but it just doesn't have that last little bit of movement that makes it an unhittable pitch.
Well, we do have the universal humidors now as well, right?
Yeah, there's universal humidors and
which so this is something that was kind of strange, because last night's Dodger game, they were kind of talking, like, it was just like a really long game. It was like, you know,
right,
like 4.5 hours.
The first like 3 innings took like 2 hours.
Yeah, and so by like the 7th or 8th, they were just started to talk about like how many baseballs get used throughout the game, you know, and. And they were showing these giant full size like garbage, like trash cans, you know, like, I don't know, 60, I don't know, 100 gallons. I don't know what they are full. And they said they use about four. They have every club has about 4 or 5. You know, the home team has to supply the balls.
Right.
4 or 5 of these full, which has something like over 180 or so in each. So we're talking 400 or 500 minimum baseballs that they have. But they're just sitting out, like in the, like not in the dugout, but like dugout adjacent. So they're not in a room. Now, I know that they would probably are sitting in a room that was humidified or whatever to a specific degree. But once the game starts, I think they pull them out. I mean, I don't know. This isn't 100%, but based on what I was watching last night, it seemed like that. So then with could they go back to, you know, I don't really know much about like barometric pressure or meteorology, but... I would imagine they might change up a little bit, and there's no way they can really make them all uniform. They can try.
They can get as close as possible. I, you know, also am not a meteorologist, but I...
Just play one on TV.
Exactly. You know, but to my understanding, yes, it will... The moisture inside the balls will evaporate, but not, I don't think, at a significant... enough rate to like really make that much of a difference. I mean, the ball is not going to change so much in
an hour, 2 hours,
you know, in 2 hours to make the balls, they all came out of the humidor at the same time. You know, the first, you know, the first batch of balls played in the first 2 hours of the game aren't going to be, I don't think, significantly different than the balls played at the last in the last 2 hours.
Yeah. And now in a similar vein, could this also be, this is different for everybody having these balls, so if they don't get affected by an hour or two, is it just that maybe these pitchers aren't used to these balls, maybe where they played traditionally hadn't been very high humidity, or maybe it wasn't, whatever, well, 70%, whatever the standard is this, you know, year, and they're all kind of still feeling it out?
That would be something that you would have to ask the pitchers themselves. I think it depends probably on the individual, but you know, also ignoring the fact here also that baseball is probably using 2, possibly 3 different baseballs on any given night.
This is controversy right here.
It is controversy, and no one really knows, because Major League Baseball is not giving a straight answer. They won't admit to it. But that's the suspicion, is that that you know, you could pick up 3 different balls in those trash cans, you know, outside, just outside the dugout, and pick up and have 3 different feels to the baseball. So
that's a nightmare for a pitcher.
It's a nightmare for a pitcher, especially one who is you know, relying on the grip to get a good spin rate, to get that movement, you know, I mean, and if every ball is different, you know, it can It can be tough to keep the consistency with your grip, with your motion to snap that curve off. It it rolls off the finger. It slips out of the finger. In different ways, it'll affect the flight of that ball.
Yeah, I would like to think that it's just the growing pains from these balls this year. The humidity is different. But, like, you know, it's hard not to go to a place like what I'm thinking about Kimbrel, not using his curveball nearly as much all, if maybe he liked the sticky stuff before this season. You know, maybe he... maybe he relied on it a little bit before.
A little bit, maybe even a little bit too much. And now he has to relearn how to throw that pitch effectively without that spider tack.
I'm not saying that that is what happened, but that could be what's happening to a lot of guys.
A lot of guys. And, you know, it's also, you know, I found that there have been complaints, not quite as vocal, but... if you notice that throwing errors are up, especially among catchers and third basemen.
No, that's really interesting though.
Even
they rely on this.
They rely on a grip. consistent grip, and they're saying these balls are really, really slick and they're harder to throw. It slips out of an infielder's hand who is not trying to throw, you know, any specific pitch. They're just trying to throw a ball to get to the second baseman or the first baseman, you know, on a line and reasonably accurately. But if it slips out of the hand, it's an errant throw. And, you know, I mean, if it's affecting infielders with a full hand grip, it's going to affect the pitchers who are only holding onto the ball with two or three fingers.
That's interesting. And now I know that there's been some discussion lately on the mud that gets rubbed on these balls.
Yes.
And I believe it's some sort of secret place in the Carolinas or Mississippi or something. Can you give me a little more?
South Jersey. A tributary of the Delaware River in South New Jersey specifically is where... mud comes from, and there are literally only a handful of people living who know the specific spot where the mud is harvested.
Now, I'm sure you all know, but to the uninitiated, every Major League Baseball gets, of course, wrapped in leather as stitched with the exact same amount of seams or stitches per ball, and then it is encased and rubbed up manually by hand by a proprietary, although I don't think it is proprietary, but a very specific blend of mud that literally gets mud. They mud up the ball, they wipe it off, and then there's stained, and it gives a little bit more tackiness and adhesive quality to it, and then it gets shipped off to the major league clubs. But
yes, well, the mud isn't
really owned by MLB. Is that correct?
That is correct. It is purchased by Major League Baseball from a family in New Jersey that has been harvesting this specific mud for Major League Baseball teams since 1938.
Wow.
Three generations, they're getting ready to pass the torch on to a fourth generation of this family as the only people who know where this specific mud was chosen. And it is absolutely proprietary. And I even bought a can of this mud for the show. It unfortunately did not arrive in time. So maybe we'll do a follow-up when it actually does arrive. But
shame.
I'm not going to give you the bell.
It's called Lena Blackburn's Rubbing Mud. And it's an interesting story, but it caught my attention on last month, June 21st. Major League Baseball, they issued a memo to all 30 teams that they were going to be standardizing the muddying of the baseballs.
So, now, I've seen the videos or whatever, maybe it's from Ken Burns Baseball. I don't know what it is, but like guys in a room literally just applying mud to the ball, toss them in one bucket, take them from another.
Right.
Is that not standardized enough?
It is not standardized. It is done by clubhouse attendance at each stadium.
Oh, okay.
And there's been, and every clubhouse attendance has their own technique sure. on how to muddy the balls.
So they come to the stadium virgin.
They come to the stadium virgin.
And then
slick,
they get muddied
slick
up
and
at
brand
the
new.
Stadium.
They get muddied up at the stadium.
I did not
and
know
then
that.
And then they were usually thrown in a trash can or a ball bag or whatever on you know until they were used. So this memo was brought out to try to standardize this process, to try to make the balls as consistent as possible on a nightly basis throughout baseball. So no matter where you were, you know, the mud was going to be applied to the baseball in the same way, having been stored in the humidor for the same amount of time, and then to be brought out and handled in a specific way before every game, so that no matter where you were in baseball on a given night, the baseballs would feel pretty close to the same.
That makes sense.
So what they're doing is they're specifying the technique for applying this mud to the balls. That's basically you take two fingers, pick up the mud and paint it on the ball, and then rub it in using both hands, and I guess there's a specific motion that baseball wants the attendants to use to rub the ball in for no more than 40 seconds. So the whole process should take 30 to 40 seconds
per ball. Wow, that seems like a lot more. I figured they go rub, 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 dry, 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 done.
No, what's special about this mud, and I've learned about this. I did a deep dive into this mud trying to find out more about it. That's why I ended up buying a can of it. The quality of the mud is such that it is not too heavy or wet, so it doesn't stick to the ball unevenly and it doesn't drip off the ball. And when it dries, it doesn't leave any sort of residue. That for whatever reason, this the leather of the baseball really likes it, just absorbs it really well.
Interesting.
So, and this mud also doesn't discolor the ball very much at all. And sometimes, if you do it in the right way, it feels nice and tacky, but it doesn't look like it's been treated because it's still just as white. And right. that's what makes this specific mud so special.
Yeah, it's not going to be like caked on, cracking off, or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah, I'm holding a game used ball right now, and you wouldn't even be able to tell that there was mud on it. It's a very thin sort of polymer type mud, I would imagine.
It is, and it's got a very nice feel to it. It's just a little bit tacky, not overly so.
So when is this going? Are they going to start initiating this next season? This season?
No, this season. This memo was issued on June 21st. It was a Tuesday. The next day, Wednesday, is when it was to be be enforced. But what's interesting, what you just told me about the trash cans that were shown on TV, does not adhere to what this memo said.
That's all going to be edited out. Sorry, LA.
But so in addition to the muddying process, the memo, you know, also lays out the other rules. You know, it say, you know, balls must be stored in humidors for a minimum of 14 days before muddying.
Oh, wow.
So at least they have to sit in the humidor in their boxes, brand new, for 2 weeks before you put the mud on. At least, yeah. Then all of the baseballs used for a specific game must be muddied within 3 hours of each other. So all the game, all the balls for today's game need to have been rubbed with the mud within 3 hours of each other. So you do muddy up balls for 3 hours.
Yeah.
You get as many balls, and that's going to be used for that particular day, or one particular game. And one of the sources that I looked at said that the memo said that they must be muddied the day of game, but the other source that I was reading about this didn't say anything about that at all.
That doesn't sound sustainable.
So it doesn't. So I don't believe that they have to do it the day of the game, but all of the balls for the game must be done at basically the same time.
This is getting a little wacky. I mean, if MLB just put out the same balls throughout the year, I think that would go further in mitigating any of these inconsistency problems rather than the Major mud League, that's been used for the last, you know, 100
Major
years.
League Baseball doesn't want to admit that they've been meddling with the balls in the way that they had. So then once the muddying process is completed, the muddied baseballs go back into the box with the dividers and then back into the humidor. And in the past, what was happening was that the muddied baseballs were just getting tossed in a ball bag and the trash can or whatever, and then brought into the humidor or not. But it was different. And in addition, then when the balls are taken out for game, a maximum of 8 dozen baseballs. It's 96 for those of you who don't want to do the math.
Appreciate that.
can go at a time into a ball bag. What they have found was that if there were more than that, because there's no specific amount before that, the balls at the bottom felt more chalky than the ones at the top because they would dry differently in the bag than they would in the box.
Yeah, using day of muddied balls doesn't seem to make sense. It seems like you'd want them to
dry out and cure a little bit.
For a few days at least.
Yeah, it would say, but that time frame, I could not find any sort of standardization on, you know, how long can they sit muddied in the humidor. Maybe it doesn't really matter as long as they're in the boxes with the dividers so that they all dry at the same rate, all cure at the same rate, and then you take them out 8 boxes at a time.
It's so strange how this never seemed to be an issue until 2019, the year of the Happy Fun Ball, and now everybody's talking about balls like all the time.
Very suspicious also. It also, the memo specified a specific ratio of water to dirt that should be used. So the mud has to be a particular consistency, and the bag in which the balls are stored need to be cleaned on the inside regularly so that there isn't any extra mud or moisture in there.
That's it's getting very, very specific when they can't even get the size of the seams or the rays of the seams consistent from ball to ball. This all seems like overkill, or it almost seems like misdirection.
I could be a little bit of both.
Skeptic.
It could be a little bit of both, but I also found that, that Rawlings for years, well, not for years, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but since at least 2016, has been very actively trying to find an alternative for this mud, trying to come up with a different coatings, different treatments for the balls so they don't come out as slick, or, you know, having a synthetic material. They've had chemists analyze the mud and try to synthesize.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
And they have not been successful.
Something that they have full control over indefinitely, because who knows what's going to happen to this riverbank or whatever, these wetlands in New Jersey, you know, if it's private property or not.
According to the Delaware River Basin Agency, authority, it is actually on public lands. No one actually owns the spot. This family, just since 1939,
that sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Has been, well, yeah, but that's why they don't tell anyone, you know, where it is. And great article from Sports Illustrated talked about the man doing the harvesting currently. If he has an interaction with anyone, comes by fishing, because it's a popular fishing area through there, and he comes by, well, what are you doing? You know, he kind of like sees the thing. He either tells them that he's with the EPA doing an environmental study, or that he's or that he's just taking mud to put in his plants that make them grow really well, and that and that usually you know, ends people's interest in what he's doing.
You just say EPA and everybody's just like, all right, yeah, cool. Wow.
That's insane.
Now, how do you think this is going to affect the All-Star game, which is coming up? Or are you excited? It was a bad segue, but...
I don't know how it'll affect the...
Do the Giants have any All-Stars?
They do have one All-Star. Jock Peterson was selected to the All-Star game for the Giants. While at the two best pitchers, Carlos Rendon and Logan Webb, who definitely have legitimate cases to be made as All-Stars, were not selected for the All-Star game as starters in favor of Clayton Kershaw and a Reds pitcher, because the Reds needed a representative. Some people are calling it a snub. I don't know. Rendon himself has said that he didn't feel that he was snubbed.
I don't see a Reds pitcher. I don't see a Reds pitcher on here. But I'm sorry, Luis Castillo, obviously, because Luis Castillo is Mr. Second Half, and he always has. Well, I shouldn't say always, although it's pretty consistent. His first half is usually pretty bad, but his second half is almost always stellar. And lately, the last few starts, he's been incredible, and he definitely deserved that. The rest of the names on here, you know, obviously Kershaw, he's just killing it. Musgrove, crushing it. Alcantara is just, unbelievable. Probably, well, we'll see. But at this point, in the line for National League Cy Young, Tony Gonsolin, who's, otherworldly this year. Corbin Burns, of course. Bednar, the closer. I mean, there's a lot of really good names on here. There's only so much room. But if you had your way, would you have Webb or Rodon be the, not the starter, obviously, it's in LA, but part of the team? Who do you think has had the better season thus far?
I would say probably Rodon has had the better season between those two. Yeah, he just had a
12K complete game the other night.
Yeah, he's from day one. He's had a couple of rough starts, but, you know, most pitchers get roughed up one or two games every season, but He's just from the beginning of the season, he's just been absolutely stellar out there, and has really, I guess, surprised a lot of people that he's done so well. But of those two, he would be my pick. Logan Webb has done really well as well, and you know, could be deserving, but if I have to choose of the two.
Are we going to see Clayton Kershaw versus Shohei Ohtani first inning?
Well, I mean, that would be the most LA-centric thing to do.
Gotta
for
do
sure.
It.
But I think that's the thing a lot of people want to see it. I mean, I know that, you know, most people at this point have had plenty of opportunity to see Clayton Kershaw pitch, but not so much so for Shohei Ohtani, just because he hasn't been in the league for so long.
It's true. I think that'd be great. I can't imagine. I mean, Tony Gonsolin, you know, has, he's a better win-loss record, although he's been great. But it's Clayton Kershaw's. He needs to get the start. It's his park. It's his home park, you know, going against Ohtani. It's what the world wants to see. I'm sure if you asked Ohtani, he'd probably want to go up against Kershaw over everybody else on here. Although, Sandy Alcantara, I mean, wow. I don't have a applause drop here, so I'm just going to do it myself. Wow, Sandy. I mean, I have him in both of my leagues, and he is just incredible. He's amazing. I think it's his Cy Young to lose this year. Again, unless Clayton Kershaw just keeps being Clayton Kershaw, which obviously is very possible. He's pretty much right on pace with his career numbers, and he's just unbelievable. And he's on arguably a better team. Obviously, not really arguably. It's obvious.
Yeah.
But the Marlins have never had a Cy Young Award winner. If you can believe that.
I can.
He's had
a fairly young franchise. So.
Alcantara has had 11 starts in a row with at least 7 innings pitched. It's the longest streak by anybody in 8 years since Clayton Kershaw actually fired off 17 in a row in 2014. But no other active right-handed pitcher has ever had a streak this long. We're talking Verlander, Scherzer, Wainwright, you know, etc. He's 7-1 with a 1.33 ERA in those 11 starts. He's also combined. He's also pitched 8-plus innings 8 times already. Only Waino and Aaron Nola have that many 8-inning starts over the last 3 seasons combined.
That's pretty impressive.
And, you know, although it never used to be a big deal, you know, Alcantara's 10 starts of 100-plus pitches this season seems like something from a bygone era, meaning he's consistently facing the top of the opposing lineup a fourth time, which I thought was illegal, but, you know, apparently no, it's not illegal anymore. Mattingly has a lot of faith. He has faced a total of 33 hitters a fourth time this season and has given up a total of 3 hits. He's unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
This guy is, he's faced 160 more batters than Tony Gonsolin and over 100 more than Joe Musgrove and Zach Wheeler. I mean, this guy is the real deal. Plus, he's given me a couple complete games this year, which in our league, you know, you get, it's not a bonus point, but it basically is bonus points. I mean,
yeah. No. But judging from the chat, no one is really happy that he's
ecstatic.
Been doing so well. Well, except for you.
It. Oh, that's great. I knew it. I knew, Sandy, I knew it from the very beginning. I waited on pitching this year because I knew, well, I didn't know, but I figured I could get Musgrove and Alcantara, and I did. And that's, I mean, it's paying off dividends, let's just say. This is the definition of a Cy Young Award winner. Because it's not just win-loss record, obviously. It's not always just ERA or just strikeouts. It's a combination of all those things. But it's also the intangible of workhorse. A guy that wants the ball in the eighth, that wants the ball in the ninth. You know, the Scherzer mentality. The, you know, just that this is my game, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a pitcher this good since Jose Fernandez on the Marlins.
Yeah, well, it's truly... truly impressive what he's been able to do so far this season. There's no doubt about that.
So I'm sure Kershaw will start the All-Star game. But if Alcantara gets the start, hey, I mean, you know, you can't really sneeze at that. Or Tony Gonsolin, I guess, for that matter. Now let's get to a little news and notes.
Ah. Well, the biggest headline that I ran across might seem contradictory to what I normally talk about concerning this subject is Rob Manfred. Could he be doing something right? he has called for an ending of the Major League Baseball's blackout policy.
Color me
right
shocked. I don't even know.
Yeah,
is this real?
This,
oh, okay, hold on. This, he said he's going to make it his top priority.
He makes it to make his top priority. So we'll see what happens. But you know, according to Manfred, the league would like to end or relax the policy, but are prevented to do so by existing contracts. So either we have to wait for the current contracts to expire; they have to be renegotiated, and it's the networks that are causing the blackout policy. It's like, yeah, tell that to someone in Boise, Idaho, who wants to watch any game.
Well, Iowa, for that matter. Yeah.
You
see the list of blacked out teams, and yeah, it's half of baseball.
Eight teams they can't watch because they're local to the teams. They're not. They're hundreds of miles away from.
What the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
If he can get this, if he can make this happen,
it would make up for quite a bit.
I'm not gonna say everything, but
no, not everything. But it will go quite a ways into putting him in a better light. Certainly,
and
for this,
totally show. Redeem yourself.
Not quite, but yes. I mean, this is a big issue. Obviously, I live in San Francisco. I'm a Dodger fan.
Right.
I watch plenty of games a year. But when the Dodgers are in SF or the Giants are in LA, even though I'm in SF, I cannot watch the game. Hell, if they're playing the A's, I can't watch.
Why?
I can't watch any A's.
Why? Games. Because they want you to buy a cable package so that you'll watch the games on
right.
the local TV
Like it's
TV
2002,
network.
But you know, that was 20 years ago. This is much different. I've been a subscriber to MLB.TV since, I don't know, 06 or so. Many a year since I feel like they first started, right? And
right.
and it's a great service, except for that
you
glaring hole.
Yeah. You're not in your team's main market, but the team, you know, the team whose market you are in, plays your favorite team quite regularly, and those are
right.
usually the best ones to watch.
You know, people don't care about the ins and outs of corporate finance and contracts, and they think, I live in this city, I should be able to watch these games, especially if I pay for it.
Right.
You know, directly, hey, MLB, here's my money. You know, there's no middleman here.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember it took HBO a long time to figure this out as well, with the HBO Go or HBO Now, I believe it was called. Now it's like HBO Max, whatever. But they were like one of the last ones. I feel like a lot of other major studios or streaming services figured that out quickly. And, you know, Game of Thrones was on. And I remember it took me a few years to get into that show because I didn't have cable TV and HBO
right.
didn't have an option.
Right.
And they finally did. I can't imagine. I mean, I would love to see the numbers. I don't really know, but I would imagine they're doing okay. Financially,
oh, yeah.
if not, maybe even better, because they're not really sharing it anymore with Comcast or Time Warner or whatever. They're getting the money direct. And I mean, isn't that the model that made Netflix the juggernaut that they are? It's, we'll pay you directly. You know, we don't need to go to a third party or through
right.
a third party.
You pay us, we'll provide you with the movies.
Yeah.
At first it was, we'll mail you the DVDs
yeah.
and just mail it back when you're finished watching it.
Yeah, no late fees.
And
kids today don't even know what a late fee is.
And then they started the streaming side by side with the DVDs, and then the DVDs were phased out, except in some places you can still actually get the DVD service from Netflix. But.
All right, there's nobody that doesn't agree with us at this point. So, what else you got for me on these news and notes here? Cause
I got the Orioles on an upswing. They seem to have, found something that has caused them to win lately. But they just last week became the first team in Major League Baseball history to allow a game tying or go-ahead home run in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings.
Jeez.
And yet still win the game.
Wow.
So quite an impressive
good
feat.
God.
But talk about gray hairs for watching your team. It's like, yeah. Oh my God, this again? 3 innings in a row? At least it ended up good for them. Shohei Ohtani became the first player ever since the RBI became official in 1920 to do all of the following in a single game. 10 strikeouts as a pitcher, and 2 RBIs as a batter, and a stolen base.
Wow.
And then I had a show favorite, Chris Davis with a K sighting.
Chris Davis with a K, Crush Davis.
He was, of course, the home run leader in 2008, but he is not currently in Major League Baseball.
Or that long ago?
No, sorry. I read that wrong. 2018.
Okay. All right.
2018.
Wow.
He just signed with a team in the Atlantic League, the Kentucky Wild Health. So I don't know what happened to him, why he's not on a major league roster somewhere. But he is trying to get back, and he's still playing. And so if you're wondering where Chris Davis was, you can find him in the Atlantic League.
Figure it out, A's. Bring him back. Okay, and speaking of A's, that brings us to this week's
Ignoble Award of the Week.
This week's Ig Nobel Award is brought to you by the Catfish Hunter. You've heard of big game hunters. You've heard of the Crocodile Hunter. Now check out the Catfish Hunter. Animal Planet is back with an exciting new reality show that's entertaining, informative, and will be sure to oodle your noodle. Watch as athletic professionals get shoulder deep in the murky swamps of Hertford, North Carolina, snatching up all kinds of river monsters. There are no Angels or Yankees here, just blues, channels, and flatheads, all waiting to get fisted by our intrepid hosts. Watch new episodes every Sunday night on Animal Planet.
Will we get tips on waxing mustaches with that? Ooh, I wonder.
Perchance. Now, what do you got for me this week?
Well, surprisingly not, it's not Rob Manfred. But another one of my favorite whipping boys, an umpire, Doug Eddings.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah.
Doug Eddings, you hear about this game? This was June 21st again. This was, an important day for this podcast. But umpire Doug Eddings missed nearly 30 calls in the worst game behind the plate this MLB student, but it wasn't just this season. It was also last season and the season before. So this
worst game ever.
Worst game in a really long time, if not ever. Certainly probably since they started really tracking how well the umpires were doing behind
right.
the plate. But he missed his accuracy was something like 68.
No, 64%.
So yeah, if there was ever a time for to get some glasses, what are you doing? What happened? I mean, it was
a muddy 12 inning game, but if anything, that just should help your average. If anything, try to get that up. According to umpire scorecards, he incorrectly called 26 taken pitches in the game. Umpire Auditor had the performance even worse, with Doug Eddings missing 29 calls. 64%. Yeah. That's pretty bad.
It is. It's pretty bad. It's got to be extremely frustrating for the teams involved. It was a long team, as you said. Maybe one of the reasons why the game went so long was because the umpiring was so poor.
Now, to be fair, in a strange way, it almost seemed like he knew what he was doing. Nearly all the missed calls were called strikes, as he scored a 99% on called ball accuracy. He basically wanted to speed up the game, maybe to go home. I don't know. But this is very frustrating, I'm sure, if, you know, the announcers talk about that sometimes, like even last night, you know, the umpire was getting a little fast and loose with on the Dodger game that was over 4 hours with the strike zone, just trying to like, all right, come on, you know, that was a little high, but we're going to call it a strike.
Well, I mean,
I know they talk about that unofficially, but like you don't want to see something so blatant like that. Like, hey, I got reservations tonight, you know, at 8 o'clock. I got to get out of here.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a trope. And I know as a Little League umpire, we were definitely encouraged to keep the strike zone bigger and, you know, encourage the kids to actually swing at some pitches, because the games that had a lot of balls, a lot of walks, just dragged on. And they wanted to avoid that. They wanted to keep, I mean, it's only six innings in Little League. Yeah, but
that should not be the standard.
It should not be the standard for Major League Baseball. You got to keep it consistent and you've got to let these guys play.
Now, you know, and this, of course, just brought up all the robo-ump talk and all this stuff. But what we don't really see are the umps that are just quietly doing a really good job. I think the biggest standout would be
he is so good, you don't even know. Hoberg.
Hoberg is enjoying a nice little over 96% accuracy rate on balls and strike calls. Even with the robo ump, is it ever going to be perfect? I don't see how it could be. It's not like tennis where there's a physical line drawn, or the foul line, I guess, on baseball, where there's a physical chalk line there. You could see if the ball touches it or not, because right, this is all virtual.
Yeah, it is all virtual. But, you know, now, you know, I mean, in the past, yeah, you had to use your imagination back there to visualize where this strike zone is. You know, it's that little piece of airspace above the plate, you know, and between the letters and the knees of the player. It's now the technology exists to augment reality. I think that it is possible to not go full robo ump, but at least have a robo assist for the umps. So then you give them a Google Glass like
Google Glass, like a little, like an eyepiece,
like an eyepiece or a screen on their mask, looking through, that will give information like where the virtual strike zone should be. And so that they can then put all their attentions in tracking the ball and see if it comes through this space. I know that the technology exists to create this augmented reality thing. It's just a matter of finding the right components and putting into practice. And you can have it so that it's an assist. The umpire doesn't necessarily have to call what the robo ump is seeing, but it certainly aids them in seeing more accurately where the ball is, and probably can record the ball versus strike according to the robo ump and according to the human ump, and make evaluations of the umpire based on the discrepancy between those.
But you're talking about real time, and we're talking fractions of a second. And yes, you're also talking about something that's going to obstruct the umpire's field of view.
It's
and
not
vision.
Gonna, it's not.
Does go, my it's, I guess what I'm wondering is, does this technology actually exist? I know virtual reality. Sure, I know that, you know, they have batters can face real guys virtually, but the guy can't be wearing a headset. You know, the ump can't have his entire field of vision.
Well, have you ever looked like through a catcher's mask? The vision is already obscured. It's the digital display is not going to obstruct their vision nearly as much as the actual physical mask that they already wear in front of.
But now I'm
face.
Also thinking about the ego of these umpires and the fact that they're backed by union of some kind. Are they going to even think that they need this thing? You know, especially these old timers. And or is this going to be something that's going to have to be grandfathered in? Like, I've been umpiring for 18 years. Yeah, I'm not going to wear this, you know, Google Glass contraption or whatever.
I imagine that there probably would be some sort of fight. But look, if you want to live the life of a major league umpire and you want to make this nice salary as a major league umpire, here's a tool to potentially make your job a little bit easier and make you better at calling balls and
this is baseball. This is tradition, and I just in my mind I can't envision them willingly doing that unless they were forced to. But again, the unions now, and this goes to more like what I would be thinking, and make it more of like a meritocracy. You get let's say you go under 95%, because right now there's still five major league umps hitting at least 95% accuracy this year. That's 143 out of 150 calls, correct calls in a game. That's pretty good. Now, if you can maybe set the bar at like 94% and say, if you don't hit these numbers, you get one strike, let's say. If you miss it again, you get a second strike. If you get a third strike, we're sending you down to, I don't know where umpires come from, but, you know, umpire to the minors or whatever, right? Because I'm sure there's always a healthy group of umpires that are dying to come up to the major leagues, just like players that are really willing to put in the work, that maybe are younger, that maybe aren't opposed to doing all this. I guess the only concern is maybe that the union will just never have any of this. Is that true? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't have any insights into the umpires.
But don't
unions.
You think that would be more of a organic way to do it, to say, look, you got to hit these numbers. If you don't hit these numbers, we'll give you another chance. We'll even give you a second chance. But three strikes, you're out. Get out of here.
I really do.
But they have contracts and stuff. I don't know.
I do think that the umpires should have some sort of evaluation system, and they should be either rewarded or punished for performance. I think it would be much easier and much more value to reward for a good performance rather than to somehow punish for poor performance. But I think,
interesting. Bonuses.
The more likely you will be in a crew in the postseason.
Well, they already do that, as far as I know, right?
Yeah, but if people like Angel Hernandez, when they don't get selected for such honors, you know, play the race card. But if you make it strictly about the numbers and your performance behind the plate, Angel, you're not good enough.
You're out of here!
I like the idea of being able to send an ump down, hey, go work AAA,
just like the
AAA team,
yeah,
and bring someone up who's a little bit younger, a little bit hungrier, who wants to do a good job and make an impression and get a job as a regular major league umpire. I think that would be good for the game. I think that would be good for the umpires overall.
Okay, how about this? How about the technology? Okay, because everybody, you know, so many people, more and more every day, it seems, are almost on board fully for these robo-umps, and I'm still not there. Okay, but what if they do something kind of like a hybrid? Okay, so I'm going to take your idea, wearing some sort of augmented reality, some AR thing that's safe, obviously, and doesn't fully obstruct the view, and maybe only under one eye.
I envision it something like
let's have it be optional, And if you score high enough each game, then you're fine. But if you don't want to wear it, that's fine too. But you still got to hit those numbers. And maybe then you'll start seeing more umpires choose to wear it, because then they're like, okay, yeah, maybe, you know. Yeah, it's hard to stay focused for 3.5 hours a game every single day. It's not that easy. I mean, I guess they're not behind the plate every day, but no,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
It definitely isn't easy, and I don't want to come across saying that it is easy. It definitely is not. But like the display that I envision in my head would be something very much akin to like a heads up display in an aircraft, something just very, very stark, just a
transparent but has a few
graphics. Transparent, yeah. and maybe like a couple of just like green lines that is projected where the virtual strike zone would be in relation to where the umpire's head is. And maybe as the ball passes through the square, the rectangle, that it changes color from
green to red.
Exactly, sure. like a thing. And then the job of the umpire is made a little bit easier, as they don't have to picture, you know, in their mind's eye where that strike zone is. All they have to do is track to see where the ball is in relation to that the
virtual strike zone.
Now,
I will admit, I don't hate this as much as like the earpiece or whatever, like they're using in the Atlantic League, or I think in all of the minor leagues now. Somebody calls, you know, he hears it in his ear, there's like a half a second delay or even a full second delay, and he calls ball or strike. That's absurd. It needs to be real time. He needs to be making the call, you know. And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you don't force them to wear this, but say, hey, your job's on the line. So yeah, if you want the guarantee,
to make it
this
easier.
Is it. Yeah, you don't have to do it, but
you're still expected to reach
that's,
these
okay.
standards.
I, you know, I think
94
we figured it out.
92%.
I think we did it. You heard it here first. That's it. It's some sort of hybrid way mixed with some sort of meritocracy based
integrate the technology to make
standard.
Make it easier for the guys on the field to do their best job.
Yeah, because it's in their best interest, the umpires, to use that technology. Again, I don't even know if this technology exists. You have to think about, you know, foul tips going right at the umpire's face if he has a piece of glass sitting there now. You know, these guys get rocked. These guys get 100-mile-an-hour fastballs at their face regularly. And, you know, the technology, I don't believe is there, but who knows? You know, what do I know? I'm an old man. I don't know anything what's going on out there. I don't know what these kids are doing. Get the technology going, and maybe, hey, I think we figured it out. I think. Good job, all right? Yeah. Virtual high five.
We'll need to get it together and get a prototype and make a pitch to Major League Baseball.
I don't hate it. I kind of like that. It's not bad.
Well, that's
not
good.
Bad at all. Shall we just get into trivia now? This has been
I have one honorable mention for an ignoble award. Just as an aside, that Joey Gallo, in the month of June, struck out 32 times.
It's actually pretty good for him.
That's
actually
sure,
amazing.
But let me give you this context. Tony Gwynn, in his last 3 years of baseball, struck out 27 times. I just wanted to put that out there.
How fancy.
That's pretty bad. But again, for Gallo, that's pretty damn good. I mean, that means he's maybe not on pace to break Reggie Jackson's record, which I always thought it might be him or Bryce Harper, but hey, good for you, Gallo.
That's why it was just a runner up and a side. I also have another little thing before we do get into our trivia for this week. I do have a list of numbers for you that I want to read off to you and see if you can tell who the players that I am talking about.
Ooh, okay.
So this is a stats comparison from the last 162 games of these two players. One, your hint is one is American League player and one is a National League player. Okay, 119 runs, 52 home runs, 108 RBIs, 102 base on balls, and OPS of 927.
This is the last two seasons combined?
No, just the last 162 games.
Okay.
Wow. And the other
player... How many home runs?
52.
Okay.
The other player, 116 runs, 54 home runs, 127 RBIs, 78 base on balls, and an OPS of 962.
I think the second one... Either Harper or Judge. I'm going to say Judge on the second stat line.
That is correct. Aaron Judge.
Okay. The first... How many balls in that first stat line? I mean, how many walks?
Based on balls on the first one, 102 walks.
I mean, I want to say Soto, but the home runs, there's no way he's got
52 home runs in the last 162 games.
Not Nelson Cruz. J.D. Martinez?
No, not J.D. Martinez.
Mookie?
Not Mookie.
No,
we got nothing.
Soto. It's not Soto.
It's not Soto either. No, it says none other than Philly's great Kyle Schwarber.
No.
Kyle Schwarber.
Really?
In the last 162 games has some numbers that are very comparable.
I believe it, actually, because
to Aaron Judge.
Every time I look, this guy's getting like multi-home run games.
Yeah, it's the only thing that's keeping me...
So you're saying Kyle Schwarber is Aaron Judge, basically. It's a pretty similar stat.
Certainly has been for the last 162 games.
And I've had people be telling me, yeah, Schwarber, you know, in the draft, he's going higher than I normally... And that's just like, no, I'm not taking Schwarber. I'm not going to waste that pick. I'd rather have like a third starting pitcher or second starting pitcher. I'm a fool, apparently.
You've had quite a few home runs. I mean, I see every other day a notifications for the league. Yeah, Kyle Schwarber hits a home run.
This is madness.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, Aaron Judge had a great start, but the last couple of weeks, last few weeks, he's been Mendoza line.
A little bit of a slump, yeah.
And now, he
still has 30 home runs for the year already.
I wasn't going to get into this, but because this is, there was actually a lot more I wanted to get into West Coast. But can Aaron Judge play center field? I mean, obviously, we know he can because he's really good at it. He doesn't even have to jump to rob home runs. But, I mean, physically, can he withstand a 150-game season even? I mean, it doesn't seem like
he can. I don't know. I mean, he's pretty much been hurt every single season of his career, at least for...
He's never had a full season.
So, you know, it's hard to say. Maybe not. Maybe, I mean, his height alone allows him to, like, reach balls over the fence that, you know, a mere mortal wouldn't necessarily be able to. But
just a couple days ago, he was on the bench for lower body soreness or something. It's like, okay, like, you know, are the Yankees... My point is, are the Yankees going to baby him a little? Maybe throw him in left or right? Maybe just let him DH just to get to the end of the season? Or do they even have that power? Does Aaron Judge hold that much clout where he could say, no, I'm the center fielder, I'm playing center field?
Well, I mean, I don't know if he has you know, Mike Trout type of clout
and that clubhouse. He might.
He's also in his walk year too.
Exactly.
So a lot of rumors surrounding him.
They want him to stay.
Of course, they want him to stay. So they're going to make him happy. Why wouldn't you want a player like Aaron Judge? Yeah. I mean, the guy's amazing, but he does seem to be a little bit fragile being out there in center field.
Yeah.
For...
Now, I don't own him in fantasy, but I would imagine that if I did, I would just never want him to play. It's like, do not put him in center, please, for the love of God.
In fantasy, you'd much rather have him as a pure DH. But, and I can think of at least one National League team that would love to have just pure DH. Well, and, like,
by the way, if the Giants don't throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at this guy, yeah, they're fools.
Yeah, well, apparently, although apparently his favorite player growing up was Rich Aurelius. So
no way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Wow. Hey, I mean, that it'd be pretty dope to see him in the West. I wouldn't want to see him on the Giants. Man, but
we'd get to watch some of his monstrous home runs.
It would make it a lot more interesting. It would make it the West a lot more fun. I don't think the Giants have a chance. It's neither here nor there. Man, I wanted to make fun of the Padres a little bit, but I don't think we have time.
There's always time to make fun of the Padres.
Well,
why don't we get to our trivia, and then we can make fun of the Padres a little bit.
Once the trivia goes, that's it. Can we just make fun of the Padres a little bit?
Yes, absolutely.
Do they officially have the worst City Connect jersey uniforms out there?
I was not able to watch the game that they debuted them
every Friday.
The Giants.
They're going to be wearing them. It's happened. In case you missed it, so the Padres may officially have the worst City Connect uniforms, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
The Giants and the Dodgers, for that matter.
Yeah,
but
the blueberry.
With the colors pink, yellow, and mint.
What?
And
wait,
a font that looks like it was stolen from Microsoft Office 95.
I need to look this up. I need to see what
you're talking
about.
Please pull up a graphic there for you. I wanted you to come into this blind. They seem to have offended everybody. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that might be okay for like the Marlins, maybe, because the Marlins.
Yeah, that looks far more like, I don't associate any of those.
I don't understand the mint or the pink or the yellow. I don't get it. Now, everybody was surely offended by that, except for maybe one man in that game, who was Blake Snell, who finally earned his first win of the 2022 season against divisional foes. I'm using air quotes here for foes, that being the Giants, striking out 11 while tossing 6 innings of one run ball. Snell seemed to like him, or at least he seemed to thrive in the moment. I mean, Snell looked like he was in vintage form. Well, you know, 2020 vintage, that is. Could he have found what he needed? He needed a little wacky costume, a little uniform here. In the past two outings, in his past two outings, I should say, he's yielded only 2 runs over 11 innings while striking out 23. I mean, Blake Snell, when he's on, when he looks healthy, the guy is lights out. Now, I was hoping they would be playing with the lights out, because those uniforms are just, I mean, I can see you over there like entranced. I don't know what.
I'm just trying to figure out. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe pink sunsets with a seafoam green.
There's no sense in trying to make sense out of that.
No, it doesn't. It's yeah. I don't understand these. At least the Dodgers kind of make sense.
At least it's the same color. The Giants too. It's not the exact same orange, but it's the same. It's still orange.
Yeah, and there's like the Golden Gate Bridge on it. So there's like something here's
right.
Just the colors, and it says San Diego.
Yeah.
It's like
the font.
What?
The font is just
what?
It's like a child. It's sad, but you know, rats off to you, Blake Snell. You know, I like Blake Snell. I like watching him pitch when he's good. The guy's lights out. He's unreal, and I know he's burning a lot of fantasy players and managers this year, because he literally took him till July to get his first win. I mean, it's brutal. So maybe he's back. I mean, in the West, in the sense of playing the Dodgers, I hope he's not. But, you know, I mean, Blake Snell is nasty, and he's fun to watch when he's on. Okay, all right. It was kind of a two-sided.
Oh my God.
All right, let's get into last week's trivia question.
Okay.
Last week's trivia question. What player holds the longest streak of consecutive games played without committing an error? Frank says probably Arenado or something. Okay, thanks, Frank.
That would be a good guess. He's definitely a good fielder, but no.
He's a platinum glove winner. M in Alameda says, I'm thinking it's kind of a trick question, and I'm going to say Zach Greinke. Ooh. It's interesting. Another
interesting
Gold Glove winner.
Thought, yeah. Another perennial Gold Glover winner, and No, that is incorrect.
Yeah, okay. Mike in Eugene, Oregon says, I know Nick Markakis had a long streak. Is he still playing? Sorry. No, Mike, I appreciate that. Although, you know, he retired right before the 2021 season, if I remember correctly. Okay, so nobody got it. So the answer, and this is actually very, I don't know how we do this, because we're
geniuses.
Yeah. Clairvoyant, I guess.
I know this was an act. This is the trick to this question. Right. It was kind of a trick question.
I believe this was your question, and I assumed it had to be an outfielder because obviously, you know, they don't commit many errors. Right. So yes, the answer is indeed Robbie Grossman of the Detroit Tigers officially completed 401 consecutive games without an error, the longest streak by any position player in MLB history. He passed Nick Markakis, who played 15 seasons, obviously, with the Baltimore Orioles and the Braves. His streak covered 400 games from 2012 to 2015. Now, as of last episode, the streak was still active.
Right.
But as of, is it yesterday? The July 10th, I believe? July 9th?
July 10th was yesterday.
I think it was July 10th. The streak ended.
The streak just ended.
We were supposed to do the show yesterday, and we did it today. So, yes, it's very topical.
Yeah.
Right on time. It is. June 13th, 2018. That was the last time Robbie Grossman committed an error before this last one here. In 440 games since, he's been perfection.
Yeah.
In defense. The record, and this is a major league record. This isn't just an active player streak. This is all time.
It just happened to be active while we had this question out there.
He misplayed a high fly ball in the eighth inning, and apparently, you know, he lost it in the sun before it bounced off his glove.
Mm.
Almost had it. Error charged to him. First one in more than 4 years. And it actually came back to haunt him because they ended up losing because that should have been the end of the inning.
Right.
And the inning continued. And then
give a team an extra out. That's what tends to happen.
The White Sox took the gaff and ran with it. So, sorry, Robbie. But hey, you know, it's a pretty good streak, man. 440. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody will break that at some point. It's not one of those unattainable records, but it does seem pretty hard to beat. It does take quite a while to
play 440 games.
That might have been a bit of a difficult question unless you read the news yesterday, I guess. But what do you got for me this week?
Well, this week I have
You do have it.
I know what the question is, so I can certainly ask it.
This is an easier one, and it's a little bit, it's topical as well. Who has been selected to the most All-Star games? Let us know. BaseballShowPodcast@gmail.com. You can leave the answer on the Podomatic website, Twitter. Where else? Anywhere else, I guess.
Facebook.
Are you still on that? Are you active with that?
I haven't been... I haven't been maintaining
for it. For all we know, the right answer was out there on Facebook somewhere. Right. In some poor guy's. Like, hey, what's going on?
Anywhere you listen to the podcasts, I imagine you can also answer this question at. Or send us your thoughts, concerns, if you want to collaborate with us with some sort of augmented reality system.
Ooh.
Major League Baseball umpires.
Here, basically, yeah.
Yeah. We enjoy hearing from you, and
from that note, from San Francisco, I gotta hurry up, this song is ending. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life, the rest, just details.
Go watch the baseball.